This is Armand DeMille with you, with The Positive Mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And I tell you, there is so many times I think I'm smart, and so many times I think I'm absolutely stupid. There are times I think I know nothing. And there are times I think I know almost nothing. What I'm talking about specifically is love. Yeah, I know you've kind of heard enough about love and romantic relationships, but we have a little further to go, it seems. Seems that we in the mental health profession have been trying to tell you all for many years that what you have to do in order to have a healthy relationship is be separate. You have to make sure you don't invest your whole self in the relationship so that if something goes wrong, the two of you can respond separately, successfully. With that in mind, our society has wound up with a 51% divorce rate, saying yes, that's why. So people get together, they're trying to be married. They're not doing it, they're trying to be married. They have a certain number of years, they survive. And then after those years, the going gets rough and the two of them get going. So the illusion here is that a relationship is a temporary, possibly permanent thing. And that nothing really takes place except that two people get together like roommates. They exchange sex, they exchange property, and they try to build something. They may even have children. But that at the end of all of it, if it doesn't work out, they just separate. Well, we who are in this business of shrinkdom know better than anyone else that the biggest pain that people ever have is around separating. That the greatest number of clients who are driven to us after a severed relationship. Breaking up with someone you love seems to be so much more excruciating than even losing your arm. Why is that? So, with all the evidence that we see, it would only make sense that people are just crazy when they get loving because they're doing it all wrong. I have a sneaking suspicion that we're wrong. We, meaning I, and the way we perceive it. So I want to rethink it. This is why I never wanted to write a book. I'd always be afraid that a month after I write the book, I'll have another idea that will say, oh, last month's book is not right. Back in the 70s and 80s, a man named Fritz Perls wrote a thing called the Gestalt Prayer. Based on Gestalt therapy, he developed Gestalt therapy. The Gestalt Prayer said the following, and some of you will remember this. I do my thing, and you do your thing. I am not in this world to live up to your expectation, and you are not in this world to live up to mine. You are you, and I am I, and if by chance we find each other, it's beautiful. If not, it can't be helped. Now, back in those days when Fritz wrote this, it became the message of how people should relate to each other. No expectations. We get together. If by chance we find each other, it's wonderful. And if we don't, it can't be helped. Well, we keep trying to tell you this, but the evidence is so different. The evidence of what love really is so different. And we haven't understood it. Why do people have such agony in relationships? Why is bonding so difficult? So we're trying to understand. And what I suspect, my friend, is we've been missing the boat. Love is so tough because it is dangerous. Yes, dangerous. How could it possibly be dangerous? Somebody loves you, you love them, they betray you, you get rid of them. How dangerous could it be? Well, I believe that something happens on a biochemical level that bonds people in a certain way that love opens you to certain vulnerabilities that you would never be open to otherwise. That's my thought. And to start with this, I'm going to give you an example of this. Why is it when sometimes if somebody is upset with you, you can't keep your mind on anything? Why can't you just say, well, they're upset and they're wrong and that's it. Now let me go back to my day. But your day is ruined. If your partner's depressed, you find that your mood is not ruined, but your day is so affected. Why can't you separate? The idea is that you should be separating, and what we've been teaching you is you've got to have your own life. But the truth is, once you have this love relationship, I believe you can't. And I think today we have something very radical to present to you about this. So why is love so tough? Love is so tough because it opens you to a level of vulnerability on a biochemical level, is what I'm saying. It does something to you. It changes you physically. Okay, let's look at some of the things that we know about. We know about the science of love. You know, there's a science. We talk about brain chemicals. What does love do to your brain chemicals? Is falling in love just nature's way of keeping our species alive? We call it love. It feels like love, but the most exhilarating of all human emotions is probably nature's way of keeping humans alive and reproducing. But it develops an irresistible cocktail of chemicals. Our brain entices us to fall in love. Now, what does fall in love mean? It means be connected on an almost intracellular level. We believe we're choosing a partner, but we may just be a happy part of nature's plan. Psychologists have shown that it takes between 90 seconds and 4 minutes to decide if you really are going to be connected to someone. If you fancy someone, you know it right away. And you could know it practically by their smell. Somehow you pick up something that says, I'm going to like that person or I'm not going to like that person. And even if your friends say, oh, this person's great for you, you got to go out with them. You're going to know it in the first couple of minutes. Research has shown that little to do with what is said. They say 55% is done through body language. Just how the person holds himself. 33% is the tone and speed of their voice. And a small percent is the actual words that they say. So there are three stages of love. The first is lust. First stage of love is driven by sex hormones, testosterone, and estrogen in both men and women. That's usually the first stage. You feel this lustful feeling. But I wonder about lust itself because I think sex is not all it's about. Why is sex such a big deal? Why do we have to have, you know, sex is nice, it's pleasant, but so is taking a shower, so is playing sports. There are a lot of other pleasurable activities that are great, so is dancing. Why do we make such a big deal about sex? Because sex does that connection that I'm talking about, that intracellular biochemical connection. When somebody's body touches somebody else's body and you exchange bodily fluids in any form, including in a kiss only, there's a change. When you kiss somebody, they change. You change with every kiss. The more passionate a kiss, the more vulnerable you feel because you're taking more in of the other person and they're taking in more of you. Yes, you wouldn't know that you're sending all kinds of messages through your kiss, through your touching, through all of the vapors, through the smell. Everything happens and it's just the beginning. It's the beginning of the invasion of the self. And it's a permitted invasion. It's almost like, hey, are you going to be my partner? I mean, just think about what happens when we're born. Just think about the first egg. You know how a sperm is flying around and it finally finds the egg and it swims around the egg and around the egg and around the egg and the egg decides, am I going to let this sperm in? And it opens a little door and the sperm goes in, and that's it. It closes the door, no other sperm. There's a choice that's being made right from the very beginning. So we make choices. The kiss, an enormous test of the choice. You know, did you ever hear somebody say he's a lousy kisser and then keep that relationship later? Right? No, he's a lousy kisser means we're trying, but it's not going to work. Attraction. This is the amazing time when you feel the truly love-stuck and you could think of little else. There are three main neurotransmitters that are involved in love sickness attraction. Adrenaline. Now, adrenaline. Amazing substance, adrenaline. The initial stages of falling in love activates the stress response. When you fall in love, you don't feel safe. You feel excited. And excitement is a very important part of it. That's the adrenaline part. Has this charming effect when you're ready, bump into your new love. You start to sweat, your heart races, your mouth goes dry, just as you would as if you were on a hunt or you're being chased. It's a very active state of mind. Dopamine. We've examined the brains and discovered that high levels of dopamine. Dopamine simulates desire and reward by triggering an intense rush of pleasure. It has the same effect on the brain as taking cocaine. You know, this dopaminic surge that people get. Sometimes I think about people who are bipolar. And I think about the manic state of bipolarity. You know, when a person's in a manic state, hypermanic. And the way they are, you've seen them. You know, you've seen them on stage. You've seen them there. They could be movie stars. They could be anything. They're very excited. They're out there all over the place. And they're showing a lot of dopamine. They're showing a lot of adrenaline. And you're saying, hey, what is this? They're in love too, but they're in love with themselves. They're creating this inside themselves. Interesting interpretation of narcissism, which is a way of loving yourself by creating these chemicals inside yourself, independent of other people. But most of us need a partner to do it. Couples often show signs of surging dopamine, increased energy, less need for sleep or food, focus attention, and exquisite delight in the smallest detail of this novel relationship. That's when you love the other person's pinkies. You know, and you see the smallest detail, and everything about that person is exciting. And then there's finally serotonin. Serotonin is one of love's most important chemicals that may explain why, when you fall in love, your new lover keeps popping up in your thoughts. Does love change the way you think? A landmark experiment in Pisa, Italy, showed that early love really changes the way you think. Newly smitten lovers change their perception. They idealize their partners. They magnify their virtues. And they explain away their flaws, you know? New couples also exalt the relationship itself. It's very common to think that a relationship is closer and more special than anyone else's. But it's not necessarily a flaw. Because when you feel it, you really feel it. When someone says, I've fallen in love for the 20th time, it isn't that they haven't, they have. And this is my radical thinking. This is what's different than everything I've ever thought. How many times do I have to turn to somebody and say, that's not true love? Well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe every time that person falls in love, they are feeling this vulnerability bonding with somebody else. And that bond is so intense and so strong that they are completely lost in the other person, chemically lost. Do you ever wonder what's the difference between having sex with somebody for one time for an hour or 2 hours and spending the night with them? What's the difference? If there's no more than just this one time of having sex, it's the chemistry. It's the breathing in the other person. It's the feeling of their skin against your skin. It's about the osmosis. It's about all that stuff that takes place, taking in the other person. There's a terrific exchange between humans. When two humans bond, they are amazing. When two prairie voles bond, they're amazing. Bonding is really a fabulous, incredible phenomenon. And the trouble with it is, when you begin to feel it, it is very hard to get away from it. And I'm going to show you how this manifests in everything from PMS to ADD, to all kinds of family problems. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, re-examining the perception about love. Let's talk about one more hormone, oxytocin. Oxytocin is a powerful hormone released by men and women during orgasm. It probably deepens the feeling of attachment and makes couples feel much closer to one another after they've had sex. The theory goes that the more sex a couple has, the deeper their bond becomes. Very often you could see in a couple who come to see me, if I ask them about how often they have sex, you can tell, well, we don't have sex much anymore. You can see that their bond is separating. It's not the sex that bonds you, but it's the sex and the releasing oxytocin and the bonding and the smelling and the touching and how close you are to the other person. That's what the bonding material is. Oxytocin also seems to help cement the strong bond between mother and baby. And it's released during childbirth. It's also responsible for a mother's breast automatically releasing milk at the mere sight or sound of a young baby. If you block the release of oxytocin in animals, which they've done, they reject their own young. Conversely, injecting oxytocin in animals who have never had sex cause them to fawn all over another female's young. So in other words, they're attracted to the young of the other people. It's a nurturing hormone. Then we have another hormone called vasopressin. It's another important hormone in the long-term commitment stage that's released during sex. Vasopressin works with the kidneys to control thirst. Its potential role in long-term relationship is for you to have reproduction over and over again, that it suppresses the effect of vasopressin, the bond with the partners. When you suppress it, the bond with the partners deteriorates. Vasopressin is a bonding hormone. It too. And what is important about all of this? Why about these hormones? What's important? So I began examining and I began asking the question, so what if this couple has a problem between them? And there's a problem, and I'm going to use as an example here, let me use PMS. It always seemed strange to me that when I would interview women who would talk about PMS, many of them would talk about how they had very strong symptoms of PMS, the negative symptoms of PMS, agitation, cramps, and all that stuff, when they were with a mate, but they didn't feel it when they weren't with a mate as much. It seems that women who have the worst PMS symptoms have them when they have a mate nearby. What does that mean? What does that mean? What does that suggest? So now I'll try a different concept. That PMS is not a woman syndrome, but it's a couple syndrome. I suggest that that irritation that takes place at a certain time of the month is really based on a tension that needs to exist between the two, both the man and the woman, that it's the man's tension and the woman's tension meeting each other. And although you can say to the woman that the woman is having the hormonal release and acting funny in her own way, the man probably has a good deal to do with this as well. It is their PMS, just like I believe it's their menopause. I'm beginning to suspect that menopause is not just a woman syndrome, but it's a woman mate syndrome. That the worst symptoms of it, the part that seems to drive, you know, the man being the poor victim. I don't think he's such a poor victim. I think he's an active role in this, which is different than my thinking about this. Depression. One mate gets depressed. Are they getting depressed for both? Very interesting. Parents and children interaction. You know, when you have a parent, a good example of this is the empty nest syndrome. You have children in your home now. It's not just mates. I'm saying you have a bonding that takes place between you and your children as well. I know a woman, she has two kids, a boy and a girl. The girl comes home. She's very lighthearted. She's lovely. She's sweet. And I asked this woman, I said, what's it like when your daughter comes home? She says, oh, it really lightens up the room. And I said, what's it like when your son comes home? Yeah, well, it's a lot of energy when he walks in the room. And they talked about an energetic field in the house, as if an energetic field takes place. It's different. It's like the energy of the room. Energy. We're talking about energy, but what is energy? Energy is something that's measurable, even though we don't have the tools to measure it. If we had the proper tools to measure it, maybe in a quantum physics kind of way, we could measure a room, we could talk about heat sources, and we could say when the sun comes home, the balance of the room changes in a certain way, and when the daughter comes home, the balance of the room changes in a certain way, but it's part of the chemistry, the interaction between the two. Therefore, when the daughter goes away on a long trip or a summer vacation, how does it affect everybody else in the family? Well, most families say nothing, it's fine, it's wonderful, she's away. But I think if you look closer, you're going to find that it does have a reaction, that everybody else reacts in their own kind of way. What about when a kid has ADD? Attention deficit disorder. Is it that child who has the attention deficit disorder? Or is it the family? Because here's what happens. What is a common response to someone having ADD? The common response is you feel angry at them. You feel frustrated by them. You feel sad about them. You feel worried about them. You get anxious. Well, you can't create these feelings in a human. You don't create them. They have to be inside the human for the human to have them. Maybe what the child is manifesting is the illness of the entire family. That the ADD becomes the focus, but it's the whole group that has a pressure that needs to be released and focused. In almost every illness I see, I now question and say, whose illness is this really? I knew someone who had major back disorder. And this man had this major back disorder, and everybody would look at him and say, you're carrying too much weight on your shoulders, as a kind of a metaphor to describe what's going on for him. But if you look closely, you got to look at the whole family. It's also the weight that's being carried on his mate's shoulders, that maybe the man manifests it, but the illness belongs to both. I would look at practically every illness now and wonder how it fits in a family, how it fits in a bonded pair, because the bonded pair, I think, participates. In fact, who is the originator of the illness? Where does it really start just because one person manifests it? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. It's just some interesting thought about relationships because it's kind of what your grandmother always told you. You know, they said, you know, it's really when you're together, you're really together and you're not so separate. And I'm reexamining this and I'm saying, well, you know, our belief that we should have it separate is really to be questioned. Because if you look at separation, and you look at the way that people separate, and you look at the reaction to the death of a loved one, you see there's much more going on here than just the psychological, just the mental process, just the relationship to your dad or your mom, or stuff like that. It goes one step further, which has to do with what we call infidelity. If someone has a relationship with a third party, that the first party, the party of the first party, how do I say this? Okay, husband and wife, for example, and the wife has a relationship with somebody else outside of the relationship, okay? And she has a fling. She goes off and she has this fling with this guy. Does it affect in any way her husband? Is there an effect on her husband? Does he get sick from it, or does he get enhanced from it? Does something happen as a result of this, because what we like to think is that it is not related at all. A man has any kind of an activity outside of his relationship, if he has any activity outside of his relationship, it's going to affect the relationship in some way. It's going to have an effect. What the effect is, we don't know, but we have to look for the effect. Because everything happens, everything changes in him, everything changes in her. So when we get back, I would like to take your calls about this, about the perception that the bonding is a much stronger thought than we've ever thought before. And you can validate it. You'll tell me what love is for you. You'll tell me about the strength and the power of this love relationship. And I don't mean love just that airy-fairy love. I mean the depth of a real relationship. My gosh, friends, there is nothing you could say to me about a real, deep, loving, close relationship. There are a few people who don't really value it in any way. But I'll tell you, for most people in this world, it's the only thing that counts. Everything else has no meaning whatsoever. Everything else is empty. And they keep telling us this. And we keep saying, no, you're not right. You got to go practice. You got to go to school. You have to build your life on your own. Well, maybe it's not true. Maybe life is empty without love. And maybe love doesn't have to be a husband and wife or boyfriend and girlfriend. Maybe it's two close friends. Maybe it's a group of people. But maybe it's something other than aloneness. Because aloneness is the thing that I believe takes so much away from us. So we'll be back with you in a couple of minutes. I want to remind you, those of you who have been writing to me, you've been writing to me on a Facebook page. I have two. The Facebook page now, thepositivemind.com, is gathering a lot of steam, a lot of information, and a lot of great people joining in. So you might want to go to the Facebook page for The Positive Mind and join in on the fun. My special thanks to Tom Gerby and to Lauren Sykes for putting that together and keeping it mastered. All right, my friends. So when we get back, your telephone calls at 212-209-2900, talking to me about the bonding, the actual physical bonding and love bonding that you have felt or believe exists. Or maybe you don't believe it exists. Maybe you believe it's not true. We will be back with you in a couple of minutes.
Dance me to your beauty with a burning violin. Dance me through the panic till I'm gathered safely in. Lift me like an olive branch and be my homeward dove. Dance me to the end of love. Dance me to the end of love. Let me see your beauty when the witnesses are gone. Let me feel you moving like they do in Babylon. Show me slowly what I only know the limits of. Dance me to the end of love. Dance me to the end of love. Dance me to the wedding now. Dance me on and on. Dance me very tenderly and dance me very long. We're both of us beneath our love. We're both of us above. Dance me to the end of love. Dance me to the end of love. to the end.
Madeline Peru, P-E-Y-R-O-U-X, Dance Me to the End of Love, a Leonard Cohen song. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. If you want to know the music we play, we're going to have it for you always on the website. So if you go to the archives, you'll be able to hear the very music that we play and probably be able to get it. We're talking from WBAI 99.5 FM. My friends, we just finished a couple of fun drives, and you would think that that's all there is to it, but if you go to WBAI.org, you'll see a little spot up there. And I keep getting letters from many of you who say you're so grateful for the programming that we have. Remember, this programming is available to you as a result of WBAI's appreciation of what we do. So show your gratitude by making a donation where you see the donation page where it says donate now. Send a dollar or two. Send something that says we really appreciate what you're doing. 212-209-2900 is our number here. We're talking about the bonding of love. We're talking about aspects of affection that have been kind of cast aside. But when you've been together with somebody, you know what it's like. When you've been with somebody and you've separated with somebody, you know the agony of it. And I'm willing to say it's not just in your mind. It's in your body as well. An example of this I'll give is when we worked with men who were, there were men who were the mates of women who were having abortions. Now, when a woman gets pregnant, you think that's a woman getting pregnant, right? No, the couple gets pregnant. What does it mean for the couple to get pregnant? It means that the man, as soon as the woman is pregnant, starts changing physically and emotionally. And you'll see the men change. Now, there are some men who are so disconnected from their mates that they don't change. But most men become a little more nurturing, a little more considerate, and they start to soften when they are in the place where they're going to become fathers. It's almost like there's a father gene waiting, you know, a paternal gene that's waiting, and suddenly, boom, okay, put the paternal gene on, here he comes. Now, so this means that men have a pregnancy reaction too, even though they are not carrying the baby. Now, what happens if the woman decides to terminate her pregnancy? She terminates her pregnancy through an abortion, and the baby is gone. They decide, they both decide. And now the baby is gone, and her chemistry reverses. But what we've learned is that his chemistry does not reverse, because nothing inside him, once the signal was set off, it doesn't go backwards. So the men very frequently have an unexplained long-term depression. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm on the air.
You are on the air.
My name is Elena Danielle. Elena Danielle, and I'm...
Hello, Elena.
And I'm from Middletown, New Jersey, and I have...
And could you turn down your radio, Elena?
Turn it down?
Turn your radio off.
Okay.
Now, talk as loud as you can into the mic, into the telephone.
I have three, I've been blessed with three beautiful boys. A 19-year-old who got a swim scholarship to Penn State University. He's a butterflyer, and he even battles asthma. This is from the YMCA. A 14-year-old who'll be starting high school, and a beautiful 5-year-old boy who'll be starting kindergarten. Now, my mom has battled depression, I think all her life. Actually, when I was born, she had depression. And I, too, have been battling it. I take a little bit of medicine, but I've been able to get off my tranquilizers. Situation is, my husband is wonderful. He's a 9/11 survivor. He's a civil engineer, and he's 2 years older than me. He's 50 years old, and I'll be 48 at the end of September. But he has absolutely no drive, with the situation being that my mom is in the hospital, and I'm her only daughter, and she has a beautiful home in Fort Lee, but she never actually even put me in her, you know, to put the house in my name and all that, so we're going through problems now with that, that she might lose her house.
Wait, we're getting a little too stretched out here. We got your mom involved, you got your sons involved, we got your husband involved.
Exactly.
We have you're depressed. Well, what are you calling me about?
Well, my husband really has lost his drive. Any type of...
Did he ever have it?
Well, when we had the children, yeah.
You mean your husband had a certain connection activity when you
exactly.
had the children. Right, now the children, now I'm
now
hearing...
Now it seems to be diminished.
Diminished, and I hear what's happened on the other side is your children have taken the energetic limelight. So between the two of you, he was once the
limelight. We've never been away together as husband and wife, except the honeymoon, and that was
I understand.
It. We married 20 years.
Okay, but could you stay with me a little bit, because I'm getting so much detail that I'm probably going to have a private session with you. I would like to answer your question.
Yes.
The question being that you have a relationship with your husband, and that relationship during that time, he had a drive and you were depressed. And that was a certain balance. Then the three children come into the picture, and they pick up.
Depressed.
You
well,
said you
no,
were battling depression.
I have three beautiful boys, and I always wanted a little girl.
Didn't you say you were battling
child.
Depression? Didn't you say?
Yeah, I'm the only one on medicine.
Wait a minute. I just said
I
to you.
I really think that my husband needs medicine.
All right. Well,
but he's being, you know, with his.
I have a feeling
that
this is a much bigger thing for us to discuss than I could discuss on the radio. Because I'm hearing too many facts, and there are a lot of facts here. Feel free to send me an email, and I'll try to get back to you with a response on it. Okay? Because I hear much too many factors involved here. And whatever I'm saying to you, I seem to be missing the boat. Like I just said, so you've been depressed, and you said, no, I haven't been depressed, but I've been on depressive medication.
I'm on antidepressant medication.
Yeah, I hear.
It's keeping me in balance. Thank goodness they have it, but I'm seeing signs in my kids. That they have depression, too.
Yeah.
One of my son was diagnosed with ADHD, my oldest one.
Yeah, so there's a family syndrome here, which is exactly what I'm talking about.
He was in a relationship and too young, being involved with someone. And now he has ADHD.
Okay, I can't. I know, but
my goodness, he didn't have...
Listen,
in high school.
Listen. You have so much detail in here, I can't possibly follow you. Okay, it's a simple question, and I'm saying to you, I validate what you're saying, but we need a lot more time to talk about it.
Greatly.
Okay? Yeah.
Greatly so. Do you have an office number?
Yes, I do, but you can go to thepositivemind.com, and you'll locate it. You'll find a way to get in touch with me.
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So, you know, right there we heard the description of the interactions that take place. Now the children are getting depressed and the husband is losing energy. And if you had an energy machine to study all of them, would you be seeing it going warmer in one place and cooler in another place? And, you know, is it like a heat machine that we need? What is it that's taking place in the entire system, not just one individual? That's what I'm asking about. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
My name is Jana Cunningham, and I love your show. Thank you for taking my call.
Hello, Jana. Nice to hear you. I don't think you've ever called before.
I think I got through one time a long time ago. I tried to get through, but no, I think this is the first time I might have gotten through.
Well, yes. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Well, listening to you today, it puts me in mind of African traditional medicine, where they don't just treat one person if they come down with a sickness. They treat the whole family.
Good idea.
Yeah, the whole family gets treated for the imbalance to help the person heal.
Well, so if a person comes down with a toothache, they give everybody toothache medication?
If a person comes down with some type of depression or mental illness or serious sickness, they look at the life of the person, and that includes the whole family. They talk to the parents, the other siblings, the whole family gets treatment. So, no, everybody wouldn't get toothache medication, but what is everybody eating, and why does this one person have decaying teeth? Does everybody have decaying teeth?
Good thinking. Yeah. Okay, and what is this? This is African medicine, you're saying?
African traditional medicine, yes.
Something for me to learn about. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hello.
This is Sue from Queens. And I am very aware of the bonding with my mother. I believe, you know, it's kind of like an imprinting that happens with animals. You know, they've done studies on that where the little bird, actually there are two new birds outside my window, and I watch the mother walking and them walking behind on a thin, narrow ledge. They haven't learned to fly yet. So I think it's very deep, and I hadn't heard anybody say what you said before about the biology of it, and it makes a lot of sense to me, and it gives me comfort because I am just so still attached to her, and it's bad. I want desperately to...
Well, you know, it's interesting. So I spoke to a young woman today who told me about the fact that she wakes up in the middle of the night with fears that her family, something's going to happen to her family. And as she described a bonded family, a very powerful bonded family that's been together, a son, a daughter, a mother, and a father. It's been together for so long, and she's never had any adversity to face. And now she wakes up in the middle of the night with panic feelings about something or other going wrong in the family. And as well as seeing it as possibly, you know, some kind of problem, I also see it as the family, the way that it happens in families, in such as you're talking about, that it's sometimes you connect on such a level. Did you ever connect with anything else besides the two birds and your mother?
Oh, yeah.
Who?
Well, I connect with people every day. New people every day.
What happened in love relationships, for example?
Well, that I kept choosing mates like my parents, and the better, healthy part of me said, oh, no, this is, I cannot repeat this, and so I just kind of gave up. But I had a dream, actually, that this morning, today is actually my birthday.
Hey, happy birthday
to
you.
Talking to you is definitely one of the highlights, yeah. And I woke up dreaming about that I gave away all of my clutter. And I stayed with it. I didn't close it. I didn't open my eyes. And I thought about all the symbolism there. And these blue shoes that were so big. And I actually wear a size 11. My mother wears a size 12.
Whoa!
Big feet. And
now there's something in that. You know what I mean? I would knock that off. There must be something in that because that is another kind of bond.
What? Big
you know,
feet?
Yeah, sure. Not big, call them big feet. Say large feet. You know what I mean? That means very much on the ground. That means very settled on the earth. That means very solid, you know, planted here.
Well, she's an air sign. I'm an earth sign, and I am that, what you just said.
Yeah, you are earthy.
I'm very earthy, and I was a flower child. I think I still am in spirit, and a highly sensitive person. And I did write about it. I woke up and I wrote about it, and it's It's deep, you know? It
sure is.
Like,
giving up the clutter is giving up the attachment, you know? It's the same talk about attachment. Letting go of some of that stuff that you're attached to.
Kind of an
interesting thought.
I hope so.
You know, it reminds me of a song. Hold on a second.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you.
That's so great.
Happy birthday, Sue.
Wow.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for being there.
Sure.
Thanks for the happy birthday.
Take another call. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Pocket of Mind. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand. How are you?
I'm good.
Good, good. This is a wonderful topic. I've called before, and I love your show. And really, when I listen to you, I usually get something that I could actually use in my life. And I love that one of what you said about, you know, the family has something. The couple has that whatever ailment it is. And it puts a different spin on it, the way you look at it.
You know,
you're not attacking, you're not judging the other person, and you actually become a participant in the solution end of it. And I think that's huge. That's like, I usually hear something from you, and I will definitely, that stays with me. You know, it changes the context, sort of, you know?
Sure. And what's your name?
My name is Tony. I'm from the Bronx.
Tony, from the Bronx. Oh, Tony, of course, my music man. Hey, Tony, but you know, here's another thought that you just brought to me. We talk about problems manifesting through the entire family, even successes. So if one person were to shine, then the entire family is a part of it, even though there's only one person shining. See, just as if one person goes bad, the entire family is a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And consciously and subconsciously, you know, I think we'd probably do that. You know what I wanted to ask you was, though, I think in my younger years, you know, in your first relationship, second relationship, you had this, I can't comprehend it, this, like you're saying, it's chemical, this attachment to this drive to have a partner. It's like incredible. And I've stopped fighting that. I stopped fighting it, and I realized I need it. I love it. It's like the air that I breathe, you know?
Beautiful.
And as a result of it, the fact that I stopped fighting that desire, it's made it so much more, more successful in having relationships.
Yeah, right. You don't have to be so careful.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? I mean, it's, okay, and the truth of it is, they get together, they separate, there's pains about separation, but it's really wonderful when you suddenly say to yourself, I do need to be together with
somebody.
Yeah,
it's freeing. And then you go about it, instead of fighting it for 10 years and not doing anything about it.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in, Tony. Thank you.
All right.
Wait. What were you just about to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
I was going to say that, too. I lost my train of thought as well. Tony, nice to talk to you.
All right.
I'll see you. 212-209-2900. Time for one more call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes.
Hi there, you're on the air.
Yes. Dr. Armand.
That's me.
Oh, wonderful. I'm out here on Long Island in Farmingdale. I was listening to your program, and I can't believe that I'm talking with you. But it is wonderful. You are like an angel.
What's your name?
Smart. I love your humor.
What's your name?
However, I was just thinking, to make a long story short, it's like dancing in the eye of the hurricane. Like you're inside the middle of the chromosome.
That's exactly what I've said, yes.
The double helix.
Yeah.
There's so much dynamics, and there's so many things that are wonderful that are going on, and it reflects life, and life reflects back to it, and it's amazing. It's wonderful, and it's magic, so to speak.
Well, you know, dancing in the eye of the hurricane means that there's a lot of danger at either part, and there is a kind of an emotional danger. You know, I mean, we got to deal with the fact, if you imagine this, just for a minute, when we're a zygote, you know, we all were once. When you're a one-celled animal and you suddenly become, the egg gets together with the sperm, the first thing you got to do is split in half. I wonder what that feels like to split in half. Can you imagine how that must be? Feel tough. Oh, here goes half of me, and there goes the other half of me. Then you got to split again. Then you split again. Then you split again. The body must be so frail to separation in so many ways because it tries to identify itself. Yet, it seems that we're always trying to connect, always trying to join.
Communication.
What about communication?
It's like communion. There's a connective.
Good word.
To the whole life thing.
Oh, you're a smart man. What's your name?
Kenny.
Kenny Farmingdale. All right, Kenny.
Yeah, Kenny D in Farmingdale, off of Secatog.
Kenny D, I want to thank you very much for calling in.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's amazing. You actually are touching upon the theoretics of a unified theory. Not to make everything the same in one, but like it's amazing because it is all connected. You know, and it comes right inside what all the dynamics and all the energy and that's going on inside, let's say the double helix, so to speak. You can understand the mechanics, and you can understand and find out about that and the structure of it. But there's so much more to it, as well as the energy of it, and it all reflects right through life, and it's wonderful. It's life and it's love.
Thank you so much, Kenny. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're wonderful, man.
Thank you.
Keep on playing.
I will. Well,
okay.
Unified field theory, of all things, would you believe that? Didn't even consider it, but of all places to come back to the unified field theory, that love is a unified field. Interesting. Hey, be back with you next week, Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends, with more interesting stuff. Do send me your response through an email. But I'm not going to stop now because for Sue, we've just got to play this additional piece. And I'll be back with you, my friends, on Tuesday at 1 p.m. with more exciting stuff for your mind.
Silver and gold have I not, so I give you my token gift. They call this small, they call this cheap, but I know you will appreciate. You a happy birthday. Ooh, yeah. Very, very many happy returns. Ooh, yeah. I wish you a happy birthday. Ooh, yeah. Very, very many happy returns.
On Friday, September 3rd, the July 26th coalition in a concert theater.